This is Screen Divers. Umba and Ricky.
Hiya.
And Steve.
Hey, guys.
Are going to take you down and drag you to something that just came out. We're not going back in time. We're not going. It's just now. This is a now thing. Today we're talking about Alien Romulus, released in 2024. Took about 3 months to make. Distributed by Fox, and starring a group of young kids.
It's not quite entirely true, is it?
No,
there's some adults in there.
Yeah, there are adults, but they're all Gen Z. It's good. It's good. It's a good thing. So we've got Kaylee Spaney, David Johnson, Archie Bruneau, Isabella Merced, aka Dora the Explorer, Spike Fern, and Aileen Wu, directed by Fede Alvarez. And I think it's in order to do an overview. Ricky, what's this movie about?
Well, it is 2142, and this group of teenagers are trying to get off the colony of Jackson Star, a oppressive colony that means that all they get to do is work in the mines. And they want to go Yavaga, which is a planet further off. And the only way they can do it is by getting a cryostasis chamber. And the only place they can get it from is from a space station above their heads. And would you believe it? There is horror afoot.
That's what the movie's about. But just a mining girl living in a lonely world. She took a cargo ship going anywhere.
Umba.
Just a city droid. Born and raised in Jackson Star.
Oh.
He took a cargo ship going anywhere. That's what this movie's about, man.
No solo? No guitar solo.
And you know what? I woke up with this fucking song in my head, and I had to get it out there, and now I imposed it upon you and everyone else listening, so I'm sorry about that, but it's out of the way.
I hope that wasn't copyrighted.
No. It's a karaoke version. It's fine. Lame as fuck. Sorry.
Welcome to the first episode. We are sued.
Demonetized.
And you know what? I tried to do a deep dive on this as well, and my mind exploded over and over. Not only the rest of the song, kind of, you know, Pete Shadows, Searching in the Night, rah, rah, rah. And then if you look at the cover of Escape, please, if you got a tab open, go and take a look at the cover of Escape, which this was one of the songs in that album, 81 or 82, whenever it came out, by Journey. Look at the cover. And if you're listening to this, you should look at the cover as well.
I'm looking.
The one with rainbows all over it? I can't.
No. There's a reason why. You can see the, a 1970s version of the Corbelan 4 there.
There's something about that cover that screams like prolapse.
Really? Oh, God, man. That's definitely in theme with this movie. Right, sorry. Steve, were you going to say something? Because Ricky was doing his overview and you went, can I, what is it?
I did say it once. So the name of a planet she's trying to escape to, has anybody done a translation of it?
Of Yavaga?
Yeah.
Is it, what, heaven? Can it be translated from another language?
Yeah.
Really?
What is it?
It means heaven. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just a mining girl.
Oh my god. Yeah. I typed
your
in
face is priceless.
So yeah, just type it into Google.
Oh my god.
Good to know.
So right.
Good to have
you
some
guys...
trivia. Keep some for the end of the show, man. A little bit of trivia.
Yeah, you guys saw this film together. Am I wrong?
We did. We were holding
you
hands.
You are not wrong. We did see it a week ago.
And, and did I... how many people did I drag to see this, Steve?
A fair few.
Was it 11 of us?
Yeah.
I mean, it, most people enjoyed it, but most people can walk out of a movie and go, "Eh, that was entertaining." I walked home and I was, I wasn't, you know, as conflicted as I was the first time I watched Prometheus. But I woke up in the morning and I had some gripes, a couple.
Yeah, I did say we needed to sleep on this movie.
It improved for you.
It improved from a stylized standpoint. There were production notes which were, you know, it was set in that universe and it was done very well. I will say that. I did have some gripes on some of the situations, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. And just a disclaimer for whoever's listening that are not close friends. Please just remember that this universe, this is the 9th installment in the Alien saga. This is a universe rich with lore. We are bound to miss something, to skip something, or to get something wrong.
Oh, we're going to get something wrong. Oh, absolutely. I'm sure of it.
Absolutely.
100%.
I've been trying to do as much of a dive as I can over some of the stuff that I might not even know. And the fact that there's novels, there's comic books, there's all of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course there is. Of course there is.
Like, it's great because this is the sort of universe that you want all of these layers on. Yeah. However, just like people, I might say something controversial here, but people can't even agree about the space jockey. And that's from like the original film.
Still.
It's rife with controversy, you know, but it's a very avid fan base. So if you're listening to this and you know this is an IP that is very close to your heart, keep in mind that it's close to ours as well, and we're human beings. Don't be a xenomorph. Don't be a perfect organism.
The same quote.
It's something matched only by his hostility. What is it? What's the line that Ripley says? I don't know why.
There we go. We're going to forget something quite easily.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know, but I keep throwing Schwarzenegger into this. Get out of there.
Come on. Do it.
Jonesy, come here.
2 weeks.
It's a 2 weeks. Jonesy. Huh? 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
But I purposely left out, because we're going to talk extensively about Mr. Ridley Scott here, and I'm actually at his big mitts. That's why I didn't say anything about Scott Free Production. And I talked about the distributor, which is 20th Century. But yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how they had to shoehorn a bunch of shit in there. And then, you know, I just like to actually watch something that fitted. I don't mean to insult him in any way possible, because the Evil Dead 2013 remake was amazing. I walked out of the theater elated. I didn't feel like it could be done. He actually did a really good job. It's one of my favorite remakes, alongside The Crazies, alongside that it's not by him, obviously, but other remakes that have touched something seminal, you know, like even Zack Snyder with Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead.
That's actually, but at the moment, the other thing
I still
that
reckon his best movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a difficult task to make a good remake. It's very, very difficult. It's like being a very, very good cover band, I assume. But actually, the guys from another podcast that I listen to that I really enjoy, and if you're listening to this and you don't know who they are, you should go and listen to it. It's called In This Episode Everybody Dies. Phenomenal. Three friends, just like us. They talk about movies, and they do talk about Zack Snyder as, you know, the greatest cover band in the world when it comes down to making movies. He is. When it comes down to his own material, you know, it can be hit and miss. It can be a hodgepodge of tributes to other stuff, and that shows. And I think that there's a little bit of that in here, plus Ridley's influence. But we are going to talk about that extensively. The running time of this movie was 190 minutes. That's 2 hours. Mm. And I'm going to say that possibly the running time actually messes up the pacing of this movie as well. Like, the movie keeps shifting gears.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that as well. If there was an issue that I had with the movie, it was this continuous shifting gears that didn't really allow for the type of gravitas that you would want from, and the suspense, the building suspense that this movie is a direct sequel to Alien. So it's going back to its roots. It's stripping a lot of the scope of it and going back to a horror story, you know.
It does do that quite well.
It does.
In a lot of respects.
Yeah, but not all the way through. That's
exactly.
The issue. Yeah. I disengaged with this movie and I was watching it several times. I was like ready to quit, and then it brought me back in. Mm. And then I was ready to quit again, and that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, I'm addicted to fast pacing. Absolutely not. I like a slow burn, but you need to really know when it's time to floor it. And a false ending, we're going to talk about that, will do that. And there's two of them here. But that's a different conversation that we are going to have later.
I'd like to add as well, we're going to make a clear warning during this episode when we're going to be going to get started on the spoilers. Because we're being very general at the moment, but there will be a clear warning.
I did say when we announced that this episode was going to be released that this is a I made up a word, man, just like many other words I make up. That if you don't, spoilertastic, it's not really a word. It should be, but it's not. And yeah, ideally, Ricky. Yeah, thank you for that. If you are listening to this and you have not seen this movie, don't come back here and go, oh, you guys spoiled the movie. Well, stop listening to the episode now. Or don't listen to us again if you hate us already. we hope you don't, but love us. Don't hate us. Love us. But ideally, come back and listen to the rest of the show. Mm-hmm. Because from now on, going forward, we are going to spoil the shit out of this.
Okay.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you've said that. So are we going to talk about the cast first?
We are indeed, and anyone that wants to start with that?
I think Ricky's already prompted this.
Yeah. So yeah, cool. Don't you go all out on David.
No.
Don't you go all out on David Johnson, because I want to talk about Mr. Johnson.
No.
Okay,
he's really good in this.
I was actually really surprised by the cast itself, as in there was not a single moment during the first half an hour, 40 minutes, where I didn't feel that the cast were holding their weight. And that's actually quite unique for a cast of relatively young actors and actresses.
Exactly, yeah.
However, there is one person that I had a huge problem with. His name is Spike Fern. His name, he is
credited as the Vandal in The Batman. And I actually had to go and watch the opening, and I think I know where he is, because you don't even see his face in full. He's the guy who's doing the graffiti. In the opening sequence. Did I take that away from you, Ricky?
Yeah. No, you took it away from me, you bitch.
Oh, I feel so good.
I wanted to talk about. Now, dear listeners, most of you know us, but some of you may not know us. I have not lived in the UK for about 5 years. I have been back on holidays and all that stuff, but I haven't lived in the UK for about 5 years. It took my ear so long to even understand or comprehend anything Bjorn was saying. And his first two or three sentences that came out of him, I was like, they're relatively short. They're like four words each sentence. I didn't understand him. Have I been away from the UK that long that I don't understand like terrible 20-something Cockney slang?
They're taking the Birmingham out of you, man.
Yeah, I know.
Right out.
And I felt really, I actually felt really shocked in myself. Like,
Is he meant to be Cockney, though? That's the thing. Like, it's an oddball. It's as true to what he's trying to be as, what's her name? Jane Leaves was in Frasier. She's from London or Yorkshire? Originally.
She's from Yorkshire.
She's trying to put a Manchester accent on, which if you lived in the UK for a while, you know that that's not it at all.
No. But there was something really weird. I mean, he grew up in Lancaster and all of that stuff. Mm. But like, Lancashire. But he, it took my ear a little bit of time to attune to whatever accent he was trying to pull off.
And
I know that shouldn't make me dislike the character as much as I do. I have other reasons why I dislike the character, and it's to do with the plot. I really like it's from the get go, and even like his like, oh look at me smoking a spliff in space and all of that. Man, stuff. I was just like
that entire anti gravity bullshit. I hated it. But I think you're meant to dislike that character. You're meant to dislike him, but it's not that he does a good job. It's the first time in my life that it's not, okay, you played the character so well that I hate. No, you played the character so shit, I dislike you. But I'm sorry if you're listening to this, Fern. I'm sure you'll grow to be a fine actor one day, but at the moment you're at the mercy of three middle-aged men just butchering you. He irritated me to no end, and not because he played a great villain. No, it's just your character's douchey, and you're not even like playing a... I'll tell you who plays a really good douche in a movie that... I don't know if you guys have seen it. Help me out with this, because I can't remember. It's on Netflix, and it's it kind of went under the radar. It's a vampire flick about a mother who's traveling with a child. Oh. Yeah, it's called... And it's there's a dude in it that plays a bad guy, but he's like a henchman. He's not the main bad guy in it.
Wow. Nowadays, that is so niche, like saying there's a movie on Netflix and it's a vampire flick, because there's about 20 of them that I haven't watched.
I know, but wait a second.
And it's not set on a plane.
Yeah, it's set on a plane. you asshole. I'm doing a quick search, by the way. Blood Red Sky. And if you haven't seen Blood Red Sky, I think it's a German co-production. And there's the guy in question that plays a phenomenal... It's Alexander Scheer, his name is. He plays this dude called Eightball.
And it's... Yeah, really mate. Good, douchey.
The thing is, again, age and experience is a thing here. And wait a second, because then you have other younger counterparts. I got to say, we're talking about, David. You were talking about David now. I'm just going to say a name, and then I don't want to take it away from you, Ricky, because you want to talk about the cast. Kaylee Spaney.
Yeah.
She's got big, big shoes to fill, because this is a massive tribute to Alien and Final Girls in general. And I got to say, I'm sorry.
Aliens. Merge.
Yeah, it does. But once again, Ripley is the ultimate final girl. You could say that she's one of the originators of this. You know, like it's she is a prominent member of the final girl in the annals of final girls in general. You know, she's up there, man. If I think of a heroine, a female heroine, I think of... Like of a woman in that takes charge and becomes a hero.
Strong.
Yeah, strong. I think Ripley, it's hard to match. Sigourney Weaver was only 29 when she did that. And I had to check.
First leading role.
Yeah, I had to check. And by the way, Ripley's meant to be her age as well, which is a good move. And I think it's a good move for this character as well. I actually thought the filming took much longer, but casting probably happened way before the production of this movie. And at the time she was casted, she was probably 22 or 23. She's 26 now. Hmm. The movie took 3 months, which, by the way, 3 months, man. Only 3 months. Yeah. And imagine having Ridley over your shoulder going, no, you should do this, you should do that, whatever the fuck. at one point, I'm pretty sure I saw pictures of Fede.
With Ridley Scott over his shoulder.
No. He was grilling Uruguayan meats and stuff. For the cast, for the entire cast.
I was
doing a regular barbecue, and I'm pretty sure it's because so he didn't have to leave the studio. It's really probably outside going, where is he? I want to talk to him. So I was like, no, we're not ordering in. It really made just fucking dress up as a pizza boy and come in. So I'm not opening those doors. We're grilling in here.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't her first like major film. She's been in Civil War recently. She was in Priscilla last year. And also she's been in good TV shows like Mayor of Easttown. And she was in the remake of The Craft, but let's just skirt over that.
We don't talk about that.
But actually Civil War is also quite problematic. That's a different story. Maybe we can do an episode on that in the future.
I think we might have to. I watched it on the day release in the cinema.
Yeah, it's a terrible fucking movie, mate. But that's
it's the not a terrible in my opinion, movie. In my it opinion. Has it has its flaws.
A lot.
But
a lot. And I'm very disappointed in Mr. Garland, I gotta say. You know, but that's a different story.
It's not Sunshine.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
Well, no, I haven't.
Okay, that's great. By the way, for those listening, you know, I have an accent. So at some point, a very strong accent. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. And it's a mess of an accent. I'm Italian. I was born in South America. I spent time in Australia, a long time in Australia, over a decade, and then moved to the UK. So my accent is a mess. If you don't understand what we're saying, please refer to the Braille and subtitles available. But anyway, I can't just come into this with the presumption that you will understand everything I say. And perhaps it's even better if you don't, because some of it will be bullshit. So good on you.
So go forward.
The other thing is, Ricky is in Australia. Where are you in Australia exactly, Ricky?
Oh, I live in New South Wales. I live about an hour 45 north of Sydney, which is, for me, I used to live in Birmingham, which is about the same time to get to central London. So me, like, I'm an avid gigger, so I end up going to gigs on a regular basis down in Sydney. But yeah, no, nice. I've been living in this area, the area of Newcastle, would you believe?
Yeah.
For almost 5 years now.
Okay. We will include Ricky's personal address and phone number. You can call him directly.
If you want to come visit, I promise. Absolutely. I won't bring a shotgun to the door.
Please.
It's illegal,
especially if you're a fan. If you're a fan, if you're a big fan, just go see him. If you're not a fan, go see him anyway. And we've been friends for about, 15, 16, 17 years or something.
Oh, God.
A long time.
2010.
Yeah.
About 2010.
24, almost 15. It feels longer, I've got to say.
Yeah.
It feels much longer.
I bet it feels longer for you.
Yeah. I'm glad
dealing with me.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Steve, what's your heritage?
So, I'm from South Wales originally, but I've lived in London for about 28 years. Give or take a couple of months, I suppose. But, so I have slight English accent, but also some twang.
Yeah, when you drink, your Welsh comes out.
Oh, yeah, I'm Welsh.
Yeah. And you're a very, very talented musician. We're not going to say much, but yeah. He actually did the music for our show, dear listeners. That's by yours truly, by Steve Nine. Go check him out. Is it Agonoi, the band that you're touring with soon?
I am. I'm with a number of different bands. Modulate being the predominant one as far as music wise, but I also play with Alien Vampires, is an act which can be taken one way or another, and another band called Agonoi, which I'm currently touring with as well. I will be sometimes missed on these podcasts, possibly due to touring schedules. And
you want to do a plug-in right now? You're going to plug in your schedule, your tour?
No. Because technically, when this gets released, the day after, I will be hopefully on a flight to Prague.
So you're saying that the moment this releases, you're leaving the country. It's a good move. That's a safe move. Just press the eject button and just disappear.
Eject!
But let's go back to the cast. And by the way, I decided to do this introduction now because I am not that, besides two members of the cast, I am not riveted at all about these performances.
Right.
But that's why I was happy to take this tangent and introduce ourselves to people who don't give a shit about us yet. But maybe they'll have a little space in their heart for us, and now they know about our backgrounds. And soon where we live, particularly where Ricky lives, because we will make your address and WhatsApp and phone number public.
That's all right. I need more friends.
We won't. Anyway, Ricky, you want to continue? So Kelly Spaney, we sang her praises. Great. She's 26. Yeah. Phenomenal. Very, very bright. You want to go? Can you talk about the really good
Mr. Johnson? Let's go with David Johnson, because what I found about David Johnson's performance was, I think I had that initial weirdness with him. Why is this guy telling all of these dad jokes and all of that stuff? And then a pivotal scene happens quite soon after that where you find out,
Andy is very spot on for a name.
I mean, I can tell you straight away, I actually leaned forward because Steve was sitting past Anne, and I looked at him, but I then felt bad for doing that because I felt immensely bad because I thought, who is the idiot? And apologies if you are that idiot. I hope you're not. But if anyone that has watched this movie didn't instantly know that he's a droid, then I don't have a problem with it. That's great, because every time you watch a movie, you're just amazed by everything. You must be amazed by everything. But the moment he came on screen, I knew instantly. Yeah.
100%.
Like within 5 to 10 seconds of that performance. But it's not, I think that's good. That's a good thing on David Johnson's part as an actor. Because, you know, he could have been slightly disabled or have like intellectual or physical disability that led him to have the stammer.
May have been like neurodivergent of some sort.
Yeah. So my key kind of situation is I stayed off the internet for this movie.
Dude, we all did. Do you remember? You in particular, you had a plugin installed on your phone. Can you tell people that they can do this?
There's a plugin you can install.
What's it called? Just plug it in.
God.
Plug in the plugin.
I have not got my phone with me. I will get that information and we'll put it in the comments later.
It doesn't fucking exist, doesn't it?
It does.
You just exercise self-control.
Yeah, it's a Google plugin.
All right, just tell people that you are capable of that.
It's a Google plugin.
It's a Google
plugin. Run everything through Google.
Okay. And so now someone has to do research because you put this in the ear.
Yep. I will add
comments. We'll put it in the show notes. Now we have to do another thing for the show. We have to have show notes. Okay.
It's okay.
You do it. You do it.
I will do it.
But he had this thing, this plugin that basically anything with the... Is it just alien, the keyword?
Alien and Romulus.
Anyway, well done, man. Very, very tactical.
Yeah.
The other thing as well, this is completely true. We had one of the hardest things, for me in particular, to do, okay, to just shut up about something. We collectively, the three of us, agreed that it was your idea, Ricky, to have a self-imposed embargo.
Yeah.
So we were not going to talk about this movie. So this episode, guys, is going long. This is going
to
go long.
So hard
not
to talk to you about it yesterday. My God.
We were in his kitchen, and at one point I said, so listen, just for the show, can I say hyperspace? Oh, no, that's Star Wars. And the moment, obviously, then we realized that you can say hypersleep because it's part of this lore, but hyperspace cannot be used. You know, the question I posed to him was, what do you call breaking atmo, which is a Firefly expression, by the way. What do you call breaking atmosphere, like when you break the atmosphere in the alien universe? It must have featured in one of the movies for sure, and I did a search online. I couldn't find a particular definition.
They do break atmosphere in Alien, and they get
doing
the
this
damage.
As well.
Yeah,
but there isn't like a terminology that is used.
And even when the Colonial Marines break atmosphere in a dropship, they don't mention it either. They just say they're in the pipe.
Yeah. That's true. we need to find one, you know, that is related to having a joint that burns really fast attached to Romulus.
Do we need Bjorn?
By the way, Bjorn. Sorry, before we continue with the cast, there's one thing I did say. I grew up in Rome, and when I saw Romulus and Remus on the side of the ship, it all came flooding back, and I just wanted to have a little bit about the mythology of it all. And I thought it was clear cut. It's not. Things have changed quite a bit. Apparently there's three schools of thought, because there's been a lot of studies made by archaeologists and historians about the tale of Romulus and Remus. It was clear cut growing up, you know, it was about Romulus and Remus basically fighting over where they were going to build Rome. And then in the version that I got the really like Old Testament version almost. The really violent one, which is it's proper fratricide where Romulus kills Remus. But it's in my head, it was like a proper, like he lifts a stone over his head and just, you know, it's not just by accident.
No, they sent his...
Careful, because if you have a version of that story, there are many. The core of it running through was to overthrow a tyrannical king, but ideally, and it's a story of revenge, but it's how they went about it. Because technically, the parable here, or the analogy, in regards to the station, to the Renaissance, and why those names are there, it's rife with symbolisms.
One of the things I did notice on the way you see the spaceship,
the station.
The station.
Yeah. The space station, or whatever you want to call
Romulus
it.
Romulus and Remus have two separate dates. I noticed that they had two different dates on either side of them.
One of them was a more important part of the ship as well.
Exactly.
They assumed that civilians were probably expendable, so they would have been in the Remus side. Yeah. Because there's a dystopian kind of vein running through this movie as well, obviously.
There is.
You know, I mean, when it comes to Jackson Starr, as mentioned by Journey many, many years ago, or, you know, in the, one of their songs.
Don't Stop Believing.
Oh, you just got to talk about your cover of Journey there, right? Yeah,
it's not my cover of Journey, man.
It's
our cover of Journey.
Oh, wow. You're putting it around. Wow. Thanks. Thanks for the responsibility.
All of us, mate.
Thanks for the responsibility.
If we don't end this show cueing the karaoke version of, because I want people to sing on top of it, that's so, please, at the end of the show, stay for that. Because we'll put it in there. And sing your own version of Alien Romulus.
Just no.
Just no.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Back to the cast.
Oh, are we going back to the cast?
Yeah, can sorry. I interrupted you. David Johnson.
Can I add a tiny, tiny bit to what you just said there?
Of course.
About the whole theme of family and disruption of family and overtaking and all that stuff. It's really interesting because today I was talking to Sal about, like, because I was very much like, do I remember the whole of this film? And there was actually a few family ties that are brought into this film and kind of weave themselves through the plot. Yeah.
One of them actually gives enough exposition to try and sympathize with the guy that we all hate. His mother was locked in. Oh, she was locked into all the mines.
Oh, but there's
by
more
a droid
to that
had to enact some safety procedures. And it was so short. And it's like, okay, thank you. No, it's not enough. He's being a douche for no reason.
That's
the exposition we were given. Yeah, by his girlfriend, by the way. His girlfriend. Navarro is his girlfriend.
Yes, we'll talk about that later.
I think there's an entire sequence that was actually missing from this movie.
Yeah, but
and I think Navarro died too early. She died. Allison Wu? Is that her name?
Eileen
Wu. You know, she's a director. Navarro. She's credited as a director online.
Yeah. Nice.
No, I was surprised I didn't that they had to look it up today.
I didn't do a deep dive.
Well, she
into
made a bunch of shorts, but I kind of like the fact that she wants to be known as a director more than an actor because it shows promise. You know what I mean? Like, and also they killed her off too early. I wanted to know more about Navarro.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second because that was one of my big problems with this film.
Oh, the cutting floor stuff with this, for sure. Yeah.
But anyway, but we were talking about David Johnson and his portrayal of Andy. I've got to say, has got to be the best character arc of this film.
100%.
The character of Andy at some point goes from an android that has a lot of issues and doesn't even talk to his own motherboard properly to being slightly fixed. And
dude, he gets to play two roles.
Yeah.
For an actor, that's gold.
Being fixed. And I tell you what, that one scene where they put in the implant that fixes him.
Yeah, and the eyes roll back.
The eyes roll back, great. And he stood in almost like Christ-like pose with his hands up, staring
outstretched.
Off into
space. So good.
From a
with the Weyland-Yutani symbolism in the eyes.
I love that, but that highlighted something for me. My brain started dissecting shit as I was watching it. You may disagree with me. If there is one technical aspect of this movie I have a problem with, is blocking. I didn't like the position of the actors in that.
No.
Obviously, because you have the main subject being frozen in time, it kind of highlighted it for me, and then I started spotting it. The blocking is a bit sketchy in this. And I think that's down. Blocking takes time, dude. It's a thing that takes so much time in the process of filmmaking in general. And I think shooting in, 90 days? That's fast, dude. For a movie like this, it's a 70, 80 million movie.
But was it blocked to make it more claustrophobic? That's what we got to look at.
Yeah, I know, but when you put someone in the center of the frame, you still need a level of symmetry, particularly for a sequence like that.
That's
it was
true.
Very stylized.
Yeah, it was very stylized.
Yeah. So I was
it had the Evil Dead, like, crane shot. Like, you know, the whole, going over the top of him and all that stuff. And yes,
absolutely.
It is very stylized, but that's one thing this movie does absolutely right.
That's what I'm praising that. I love it. But, and we're going to talk about color palettes as well, because this movie pays homage to the other movies in the franchise. Are you done with Johnson? Or you want to keep going? Because you should keep going.
You should keep going.
Yeah, Ricky, go on.
I mean,
come on, you were praising
his performance. Like, he goes from somebody who isn't really even a member of the crew to somebody who controls the crew. somebody who like knows more. And you know, you have that classic scene where you find out that his objectives are completely changed, and then you're like, oh god, what is he gonna do then? And that character, that actor, completely nailed it from start to end. Completely 100%. Nailed it.
You're right. The power dynamic shifts within the group very quickly, several times as well, back and forth, and it's great. Man, I'm a fan. He wasn't on my radar. I started looking at the stuff that I can watch with him. And even if topically doesn't interest me, one of them is about the financial collapse of 2008, and it's about the bankers and people. So it's one of those dramas.
Is it Industry? Is that the
one?
Yeah, Industry. See,
the topic is of no interest to me because it's got greed written all over it, and I'm not into that. But just because I want to see him on screen, I may just take a look.
I think he's got a very bright future ahead, man. Full stop.
I mean, look, when I was looking for other David Johnson stuff, I was also, to reconnect to what we were talking about, Alvarez, you know, and again, these are all personal points of view, so please, I'm in no position to criticize. Everyone that took part in this project did a phenomenal job, besides you, Ridley. But, Jesus, let the man cook, man. Let the man, like the kids say today, let the man fucking cook. Ricky, you're gonna have to, we'll put it in the show notes, the interview, or several interviews with Ridley Scott and Alvarez. You sent me that, like, one that's amazing. Well, there you go,
five of them, man.
And you can see Alvarez being as diplomatic as possible. But anyway, when it comes down to Fede, I am still very hopeful. I mean, he did Don't Breathe,
Don't Breathe.
Yeah,
and which shows in this movie,
of course, but it was 2016. It's entertaining, but it's also another example of compromise. Because I think he was given 30, 40 million. That's a big budget to make that. And it's by Blumhouse. I think it was a Blumhouse.
Yeah, it's a Blumhouse production. Yeah.
So you take it. Of course, you're not going to, you know, you want to work in the industry. You want to make a name for yourself. And so again, working when it comes down to Evil Dead, that's huge shoes to fill. You're working with Raimi, but I really want to see him do his own thing. And one of the things that he did, which is extremely experimental, which I haven't seen yet. So collectively, we are either going to be very disappointed. But I watched a couple. What I'm talking about is an experimental show released by Apple TV. But go out there, find it, which is more akin to a podcast than anything with a visual element attached to it. And the series in question is called Colds. I don't know if you know anything about this. It came out in 2021. It's 9 episodes. The creator of the show is Fede Alvarez. And the cast. Do a quick look, Steve or Ricky, whoever's got a tab open, please, and tell people the first two or three people that are involved in the cast.
I know they are. The first two or three people that are in the cast are Audrey Plaza, Clancy Brown. Clancy Brown.
Can you say that with a little bit more excitement? I mean, you talk a bit about the quality.
Clancy motherfucking Brown.
Clancy Brown from, you know, Deadwood. You know, didn't we know? In an episode is, in an episode is Aaron Taylor Johnson, and I don't. Let's pretend we've got some younger fans. All right.
Okay. Whatever.
Joey King's in an episode.
Oh,
Joey King. Oh, yeah. Man. You know Joey King. Yeah.
My younger voice is idiotic.
I mean, I'm also skipping over like Rosario Dawson, Paul Walter Hauser, one of the Duplas, Mark.
I love them.
Ooh, Nicholas Brown
Creep 1 and 2.
Oh, I love Creep. Love Creep so much.
Amazing,
Creep 2 was so good.
Amazing.
Nicholas Braun from Succession and Nick, to the younger audience that are listening to us, of course they are. Nick Jonas from the Jonas Brothers.
Oh, there's a video element to this. So do you guys know we're using a platform that allows us to look at each other
You're never going to see the videos. Never.
Yeah. Oh my God, no. You're never gonna... We're drinking whiskey. We're all oily and
I'm in my attic.
I'm ready for bed. I've got my curlers in. I look like something out of
myself. Greece. I am very oily today. I am more oily than usual.
So, okay. Have we?
I can do that, right? I can do the stereotypical Italian.
You can do that on yourself.
I can do that every day. Sure you can. I do that 24 hours a day, every day.
Would you allow us to do it too? Can we join in on that?
I'm very sad because I cut out the carbs lately and I cannot have a pizza or pasta. And I'm very, very sad. But I am.
You will win.
Let's-a-go.
I'm tossing a banana behind me. Fucking banana peel. Okay. Speaking of young people, I'm a huge fan of Caitlin Dever. And if you don't know who she is, because I think she must be in the same age group as Spainy.
Spainy.
I don't think she is anymore, mate.
No. How old is Caitlin? Caitlin Dever?
I'll pull it up now. But
no, you know who she is? She was the lead in a movie that if you are listening to this and you haven't seen this movie, you should. The movie in question is No One Will Save You.
Sorry.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite films of last year. And she is the lead. So there's a lot of talent in the Gen Z generational bracket. Yeah. There's so much talent coming out. I think Kaylee Spenny falls under the same category. But this movie actually was recommended to me by another podcast. And the man behind the podcast is George. Phenomenal voice. If you guys are listening to this.
The Horror Weekly.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Oh, my God.
Why are you wasting your time listening to us? Just stop listening to this.
Oh, thanks.
I don't give a shit. This is for us.
If you only watch this film for any reason, just watch it for David, and that's a good reason to watch it. But
oh my God.
Going other ways.
Yeah, mass back to the movie.
So Alien Romulus. Just move along. Alien Romulus.
David Johnson, Kaylee Spaney. We're not going to talk about Fern, whatever. And I think we're about to move away from the cast,
Spike
by the way.
Fern.
Yeah. Well, sorry, what?
Spike Fern.
You know what? If he actually picked that name himself, double douche. All right? Double douche. What is it? What's it called?
It sounds like a Beano character.
No. It does, actually. For our friends in the States, could you please, in a few words, describe what Beano is?
It's like a Dennis the Menace comic, but with British sensibility. So everything ends in a fart joke or in like booger humor.
British sensibility and fart joke. next to it.
Which is pretty much exactly what it is.
Talk about aesthetics. All right. Let's talk about the look. Let's talk about the love. Let's talk about if David Johnson's the best thing about the cast, I would say the aesthetics are the thing that keeps you going through this whole movie.
My God.
I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to get myself a whiskey and you guys start talking about it. I'll jump in.
Go. Okay.
Go for it, Steve.
I can't believe he's doing this right now.
I know. This is meant to be like the episode that is the most professional, right? The first one.
Right. Yeah, it's just completely broken down into the same old bullshit.
God.
It's not what you think. It's not what you think.
So, Steve, tell me about something about the aesthetic.
One of the things I noticed straight away, as soon as the movie starts, we're thrown back to the Nostromo, but we're seeing it from a point of view from a probe ship. I think this is a remote droid ship. One of the key details straight away is the throwback. The probe is actually called Echo Probe 203. And it's in the same curved, stylized font style that the Nostromo was done from 1979. So you instantly get the typeface, this mindset, and it takes you straight back to Alien. One of the key things with this movie was I deliberately sat down to watch Alien the day before viewing this movie. So pretty much I went in with the artistic and, oh my God, Alien and its production design was amazing. One of the key things which Ridley Scott did very well was he came from a photography background. And you can tell with his shots for the original Alien that it was just really well done. It was something special. We'd never seen science fiction horror film from that time period, which upped the ante in design and aesthetic to the max.
You're talking about Alien.
Yeah. Mm. And what we're seeing is callbacks, direct callbacks to the ship design, claustrophobic, the feel. It feels like it's taking us all the way back to Alien.
There's a ton of fan service in this, yeah.
The used aesthetic, same as Star Wars. And I'm going to just mention this as well. So we've got Ron Cobb, who actually worked on production of Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, which was just what we watched, which was Star Wars. He also did Alien, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Aliens, The Abyss, Robot Jocks, Total Recall, Space Truckers. Yeah, you know, Space Truckers.
Oh, we're going to have to cover that one. No. Okay, that's a different story. I love that movie, dude.
I haven't seen that.
At age, like, you know what? You know what? You just put it on the schedule.
That's what you put it on the schedule. Right? Oh, no.
That's the one with Stephen Dorff.
Yeah,
and Dennis Hopper, and Charles Dance.
Space Trucker.
Charles Dance.
But when we look at the same conceptual design,
which, by the way, another actor that was in Alien Cube.
Yeah.
Oh, Ricky, did you see that?
Alien 3. It's just Alien 3.
He hates it. It was a marketing ploy, dude. I'm telling you. For our listeners, please, am I crazy here? Type in Alien Cubed, as I said it, all right, on Google, and what you get is Alien 3. So it was marketed as that, because it's a little 3. It's a little 3.
As I said to Steve, I would rather you call it Alien to the Power 3 than Alien Cubed, all right?
Oh, my God,
anyway,
man.
But listen, Steve was actually being very beautiful and coherent about the set design.
Steve was being coherent? I'm sorry, Steve.
Yeah, it makes a change, I know.
Jesus Christ.
I've only had the one whiskey at 10 feet.
My God. Neither of you are driving, right?
Don't take him away from this beautiful world of coherence.
It was just really beautiful.
Go ahead, Steve.
So what we're seeing is this design aesthetic, which is played through from the original Alien into this, and also Aliens. We've got moments of the same design aesthetic from Aliens, which also he worked on. So, but we're seeing the Echo Probe. We're seeing the information which is being pulled through.
Yeah.
And one of the things I caught straight away when we see the hull of the Nostromo, we actually see just before that it goes the Zeta Reticuli system, and we instantly know, as Alien fanboys and aliens, that is the same system that is LV-426. I know that we'll get a bit of a kick out of this. Nostromo's actual code was 18092469.
Right.
But it's the fact that this is a different system, and we're calling back to LV-426's
absolutely
actual Zeta Reticuli system, which exists. It's I can't remember. I think it's like 3.6 light years away from us or something.
It was referenced, that whole 3.6 light years was actually referenced later on in the movie as well.
Absolutely. I called the fan service. I didn't mean to insult Fede. I think coming from him, actually.
It
feels like it's from the heart, really. Like
paying homage. This homage. Every single bit of that design choice has been done properly.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Even when we get to the colony, which is Jackson Star, we're seeing Hadley's Hope as it probably would have been.
Even going on about the look of the colony, I know that in Aliens, especially if you watch the director's cut, you actually see an active human colony
exactly,
in the future.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
this is actually the first time for a cinema cut that you actually see what people have to deal with being under this nouveau future. And what's really great about that is that It's dirty. It's dark.
It's grimy.
Everything's grimy. Everything is like... Yeah.
People are dying due to Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Lyme disease.
Yeah. And the whole, like, it's dystopian as fuck, dude.
Yeah.
As usual. Yeah. I wouldn't expect anything else. Like,
and the whole like subplot line of like, you know, like... You know, and it's done in written text, like, you know, old school and all that stuff. How many hours of daylight does this colony get? Zero.
Zero.
And you're like, oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And you can tell as soon as she gets into that spacecraft and goes up above the cloud line and sees the sun of the
Navarro
for the first. Yeah.
When she's standing over the cryopods.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. That's a beautiful shot. Again,
it's beautiful.
Weird blocking, but it's a beautiful shot. No, I'm telling you, it was with my head
You're
in while I was watching the movie,
man.
Dude. Yeah, no, I'll tell you why. There's something about this movie. I think it was a conscious decision to keep the scope of the film smaller. There was a claustrophobic look to it. In Alien, everything looked wider. Here, it really looked constricted.
Well, no, Alien had a lot of
LV-46. It does, but wait, let me finish, because I think it's got to do with the fact that a lot of the shots happened on the Corbelon 4. Corbelon 4, yeah?
Yeah.
Corbelon was a character out of a famous novel, and I'm looking through my notes now, because obviously I'm putting this factoid out there. Factoid.
Fucktoid.
It's a sex toy from the future. It's a
fucktoid.
Yes,
it's a. that's actually very novel of you. I think we need to keep that.
I think that's going to be a thing that we're going to keep using for factoids. Yep. Factoids.
Joseph Conroy's 1904 novel Nostromo.
Which is a callback.
Thank you. Which is a callback. So the Corbelon 4 is a much, much smaller ship than the Nostromo. It's a cargo ship, but it's a tiny, tiny cargo ship compared to the Nostromo. So I get that the scope of the shots is smaller because you're meant to get this claustrophobic look all the way through. But the problem is that in Alien, that claustrophobia was enhanced by the suspense of the sequence. And here, it's kind of pervasive. It's all the way through. And I didn't particularly like that. I understand the choice.
One of the key things we've got to take away from this is that we don't have the suspense at the beginning. Well, we don't, not in the same way.
We're giving exposition at the beginning of this movie.
We have to kind of work our way into the situation that these characters don't know what they're getting into. They believe the scope, the fact that Alvarez has set up as well with the cameras in the ship. So one of the first things when they turn on the engines and go through the checks, they show you the key areas where things happen. He sets that up very well.
Well, yeah, Navarro dies in the fucking cockpit.
Yeah,
that's the chest busting thing. Happens in the cockpit.
Yeah, like... and then the cargo, and then the corridor, the exact corridor with the cocoon.
Yeah.
So
in fact, Navarro, because obviously we're not spending enough time with her. Which is a shame, like Ricky said earlier. I wish we did. Because one of the things, and I'll tell you another thing that bothered me about this movie after this. Navarro is the pilot. She's the pilot. She's relatively skilled for her age as well. And she dies as, like, so the suspense is fueled through that sequence by the fact that she's dying. And we know for a fact that she's going to have to be present to make things work later, because without her, they have no pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's one of the, and that's why it happens in the cockpit, I think.
Yeah.
So narratively speaking, that sequence works for that reason, but it's very, it's too practical when it comes out to the structure of the narrative. It's a little bit, it services the story to a certain extent, but they killed it off too early, man.
I really think that the whole thing is, and I want to talk about this later, and I've earmarked it with you guys as well. The whole thing of this movie is that there is so many homages going on, or homages, or whatever you want to call it, that, for
Let's
example...
Let's go homage,
fromage.
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 Fromage. Some of them are a little bit cheesy.
That's a spoiler. No.
Brother, end of part one. Please join us next week for part two,
of our three-part episode series on Alien Romulus. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we wish you all a very good week. Still here? Well, if you are, you danced, didn't you? It's a hell of a show tune. That's by Steve9. And now go! Go! Get out of here! Come on! Go!